Hi there, we are James and Dan, two fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I got one here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome back to Odds Law with FitzDares, where the numbers are dragged under a lamp and interrogated like a Second World War spy. You may have noticed an old favourite returning to the sofa. Henry Beasley, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back, Lola. Obviously, not had to travel too far to get back on the sofa, but I'm happy to be back. Got a pretty special episode lined up, haven't we?
We certainly do. That's a clue. The special one, the special episode.
Very
I like
good.
It. Unfortunately, Ian McIntosh couldn't be with us today, and that is because it is his wife Rachel's birthday. So on behalf of the whole team at Odds Law, happy birthday, Rachel.
Big happy birthday to Rachel, yeah.
On today's show, we're going to be talking all things Chelsea FC. What is the plan at Chelsea? Are they any better than they were last season? And will the fans ever warm to Liam Rosinha? We will also be hearing from Chelsea analyst Connor Holden, who's going to help us crunch the numbers on Liam Rosinha's vision at Chelsea. It's tradition on Odds Law to play, well, we play a variety of different games at the top of the show. I've changed up the script a bit. And I'm going to ask you, if this weekend of Premier League football was a movie, what would it be?
This is tough because, as you know, Lola, I don't really do films.
Not a movie buff.
I'm not really a big movie guy. But I say from a Chelsea perspective, it would have been some sort of horror movie.
Saw.
It really couldn't.
Human centipede.
Nope. It really couldn't have gone much worse. Obviously, dropping 2 points at home to Burnley and then Champions League chasing rivals Liverpool gaining 2 points in stoppage time. It was a pretty brutal 4-point swing there.
Yeah, I think if I was to choose a film, it'd have to be a heist film.
Okay.
Something like
Smash and grab.
Yeah. I was thinking something like Ocean's 11, you know. Okay. That makes it sound like it was an elaborate heist. It wasn't. It was a complete farce. But today is not about Liverpool, listeners. Today is all about Chelsea Football Club. And that is why Henry is here and that is why Connor is here. So let's start with the Burnley game. I mean, I know from personal experience the pain of dropping points at home to one of the newly promoted sides. Chelsea have now done that in back-to-back games.
Yeah.
Take me through the weekend and how you're feeling as that game unfolded.
I think what's quite frustrating for Chelsea fans is that it seems to be the same issues, right? That continue, the same mistakes that we continue to keep making. Very similar to the Leeds game in midweek, 2-0 up, absolutely cruising, and then just moments of madness that are proving so, so costly. The game on Saturday, I mean, Chelsea obviously get the early goal through João Pedro. It's not particularly exciting. They're not sort of slamming on the door for a second, but they were never in any sort of danger of conceding. Obviously, then we get the moment of madness from Fofana and the red card, and that completely flips the game on its head. And this team has proven this year that they're not particularly good at dealing with adversity. I know we're going to talk about some of the red cards later on.
Yeah, I think in lots of ways, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but in lots of ways, the Burnley game feels like a bit of a microcosm for Chelsea's season and also Chelsea in the last few years.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that I know has frustrated you, because we've talked about it a lot, is the kind of youthful naivety of this Chelsea team. And, you know, they've had 8 red cards this season across all comps, 9 if you count Maresca being sent off against Liverpool. But that's definitely a league high. And I think that's the highest Chelsea have had for a good few years. And we've still got 11 games to go. So that youth and that inability, as you say, to ride out adversity, that's really costing Chelsea.
Yeah, I think that's a bit of a get out of jail, though, at times, the sort of youth argument we keep hearing. If you're good enough, you're old enough, that kind of thing. But Fofana this weekend, I mean, he's 25, he's been around long enough, he's played in the Premier League for long enough to know much better than sort of go diving into to a tackle, a needless tackle when you're on a yellow card already. So I don't really want to sort of give the free pass of the sort of youthful inexperience. Fundamentally, these guys just have to know better. And it has just been so costly, the red cards and mistakes. Some teams can kind of get away with it, but we haven't been able to this season.
So obviously with Chelsea, you know, for us, for our generation, we think of John Terry, Didier Drogba, Lampard, Ballack, like all these really senior high-profile figures in the dressing room. I think you're right, by the way, to not excuse. You know, these are professionals, so some of the decisions that they make, you know, rightly can be called into question. But do you think there's a lack of leadership in the dressing room? There's a lack of authority of someone who's actually able to say, look, Wesley, in the case of the weekend, you know, this is unacceptable.
Yeah, I think this is something that until Chelsea win something significant, more significant than the Club World Cup, this is something that, you know, we're going to keep getting asked about. Is there enough leadership in the dressing room? Reece James, obviously the club captain, from what you read and what you hear, he's not that kind of Terry type figure who's going to be screaming at you and in the penalty box setting up for a corner. He does things slightly differently. But I don't know, like, fundamentally, there's some really experienced players in there. You know, they might be young, but, you know, you look at the likes of Enzo Fernandez. I think Caicedo's a leader in a sort of slightly different way. Reece James, obviously, as we mentioned. Again, it just feels a bit of an easy way out to say, oh, lack of leadership. Fundamentally, these guys just got to do their job better than what they're doing at the
moment. One of the leaders that you mentioned, Moises Caicedo, obviously got a rash red card in one of your biggest home games of the season. So there's obviously something there. I think actually that segues us on quite nicely to talking about Liam Rossinha, who is the man in charge at the moment. He's not, you know, he's not got loads of top level experience.
No.
He's managing at the sister club, Strasbourg. He's been parachuted in. Do you think that's part of what kind of fuels the doubt in the fan base? I mean, we'll get on to talking about Rossinha in more detail, but do you think that's part of why people are so hesitant about him? Because he doesn't have that authority and that leadership quality.
Yeah, I think, you know, as fans, we sort of have to accept this. Gone are the days of Chelsea going after a Thomas Tuchel, a Mourinho, a Conte. The manager almost mirrors the players that they brought in. Young, relatively inexperienced at the top level, crucially on lower wages probably than many of their predecessors. So I think whilst, I mean, when I was underwhelmed by the appointment of Rossinha, I was prepared for it in the sense that I don't think fans were necessarily expecting the kind of Hollywood A-star appointment, if that makes sense.
That's the fan perspective on Liam Rossinha. But let's hear from Connor about what Liam Rossinha's tactical vision is and how that differs from under Enzo Maresca.
So in terms of Liam Rossinha's tactical vision, I think the main difference between him and Maresca is the way that they sort of look to change the tempo. With Rossinha, his philosophy is built around baiting the opposition press forward. Think of Unai Emery's Aston Villa and how they look to sort of keep the ball in the defensive third, lots of touches in that third, to bait the opposition and provoke them to step forward and step out. This can usually be at quite a slow tempo. And I think that it's that shift of tempo to them when you can draw the press in and then explode with a bit more high tempo, a little bit more energy and electricity between the lines, having lots of players then arriving, your wingers coming centrally and almost packing the centre, having that close proximity central attacks, which then also gives you a very good net to counter press from. I think that this is the main way that Rossinha likes to sort of build those attacks and have lots of players in close proximity in the middle of the pitch, shifting that tempo. Maresca's was a little bit different in the sense of his was a bit more controlled. We'd be slow tempo from the start of build-up, but then we'd also build through the thirds at a slower tempo because that allowed us to set up our rest defence in a bit more of a sort of solid way, have a little bit more solidity moving through the thirds. And then we'd basically be able to generate those attacks through the wings a little bit more, which is a little bit more risk-averse than it was under like Rossinha. What we're seeing is a little bit more risky with that central play. But we have a little bit more control of defending those transition attacks against us. The other thing would probably be that both are quite heavily man-to-man oriented when it comes to off-the-ball tactics. But Rossinha has already shown willingness to drop off and play a little bit more zonal with some zonal schemes at times. We're going to probably see a little bit more of that in these coming games against better opposition than we've played in the last few. So that will be interesting to see how that develops.
So obviously, Rossinha is a different type of character to Enzo Maresca as well. I mean, we could do a whole podcast about some of Liam Rossinha's sound bites.
Yeah.
Enzo Maresca had more top level experience than Liam Rossinha. So I guess my question to you...
Did he have more top level experience? Sorry to cut
well,
you over.
Because he'd been part of that City.
He wasn't the main man, was it, City? But obviously, he had a good season with Leicester in the Championship and And Chelsea took a huge chance on him as well, let's not forget, on Maresca. And did it work out well? I don't think the fan base ever really truly warmed to him, but he did win two trophies and secure Champions League qualification in his only full season at the club.
So, it did all start off quite well under Asenio, that's worth saying. Yeah. I know where you're sitting now with the Burnley game.
Yeah,
it's not feeling great. What was it, 5 wins out of 6 at the start?
Yeah, I think won our first 4 in a row in the league and then beat Hull
in the cup
and Charlton in the FA Cup. And then there were 2 losses to Arsenal, weren't there?
But I mean, it's fair to say that as a body of work, you know, it was mostly against opposition at the lower end of the Premier League table. As a body of work, I don't think, you know, it definitely silenced some of the initial noise and it was good that he got off to a fast start, but the fixture list is taking a very difficult turn. So what does Liam Rossini have to do to convince you that he has the credentials to be Chelsea manager?
I think the Napoli game actually that we just mentioned there does sort of show Rossini's strengths and weaknesses in the sense that he went with a back 5, try and match up against Conte's Napoli team, and then it wasn't working pretty obviously and instantly changed it at half time. And I think that is something that amongst the fans he's been praised for, is his ability to make change quickly. That's something that Maresca was sometimes guilty of, not making changes quickly enough and letting the game sort of drift. So that was a real sort of positive for Rossini. But as you mentioned there, he's not really beaten anybody yet in my mind, and the fixture list is getting a lot tougher. And I think we're going to learn a lot more about Liam Rossini, the manager. We've heard about Liam Rossini, the manager, the motivator. I think he speaks brilliantly on the whole, to be fair. Sort of toes the line between a little bit cringe and quite charismatic.
I do get flashbacks to Brendan Rodgers. And in the week where Brendan Rodgers posed with the fact that the headline had to say, this video is not AI, really tells you everything about how bad that
is. He's worth mentioning this week. He's back in the news, isn't he, yeah. Brendan? But yeah, like I say, I think we'll learn a lot more about Liam Senior, the manager, the tactician, as we've got, you know, Arsenal away coming up, followed by Aston Villa away, got Man City at home to come, got to go to Anfield to finish the season. So he's going to come up against some of the best managers and tacticians in world football.
You sound pretty measured, but let's find out what Connor thinks. Connor, what does Liam Rossini have to do for you to make it feel like he really fits in at a club like Chelsea Football Club?
Brilliant question, because his interesting media approach, some would say, right now is being compared to someone like Graham Potter, who a lot of fans didn't think was up to the job. I actually think that Rossini is doing a good job in terms of how he's dealing with the media. I think he's saying the right things. I think he's trying to connect with the fans through the right sort of comments about what it means to be Chelsea and to bring that winning mentality back to the team. I don't think he's saying anything wrong in that sense. Of course, he's had a few quotes which have been taken out of context and put into memes online and things like that, which doesn't help in terms of being the brunt of the joke. But ultimately, the only thing I can say for this is for the bold group of Chelsea fans, for the broad demographic, the thing they care about right now is winning. That's what's going to win them over. Even with Maresca, I was a big Maresca fan myself, but the fan base, it was very split on Maresca. He wasn't somebody that really got the fans on side. Maybe half of them he did. But I think Rossini, all he needs to do is he just needs to keep winning games and he needs to say the right things, which I think he has done so far. Connect with the fans when those big moments do come. That's all part of it. And I think especially for the match-going fans to be singing his name. But ultimately, the only answer I can really give to this is to win, because I think that when it comes to the broad Chelsea fan base, I think that would be the answer that they tell you, win games.
Okay, we're going to a break now. And when we come back, we are going to talk about Chelsea's daunting fixture list and the bigger picture around what Bluco's strategy is at the club. Look, if you're here, you like sport. And if you like sport, you've definitely had a moment where you think, you know what, I fancy a bet. That might even have happened to you while you've been listening to this show. Now, you could do it the dull way, silently poking away at an app all by yourself, like you're ordering a taxi. And sure, we do have an app, but what if I told you there's an even better way? Like, you know, the good old days, you could be living in them right now. Call Fitstairs, speak to a real person, have a quick chat, and get your bet on like a civilized human being. Phone if you like talking, text if you don't, we're very accommodating. It's 020 7851 5407 or 07492 882 213. Friendly brokers, absolutely no robots, over 18, and please gamble responsibly. Henry, you primed me for this Chelsea fixture. It's back at a time when it was too painful for me to even look at the Barclays Premier League table. You were saying, don't worry, Chelsea's fixtures get very as we go from March into April. Just to run through, this Sunday, obviously, 4:30 p.m, it's Arsenal away. Then on the Wednesday, Aston Villa away. And then you've got the FA Cup game in between. And then it's Newcastle at home on Saturday, the 14th of March. Sandwiched in there, you've got a Champions League round of 16 game. And then on the Saturday, it's Everton away. And then the second leg of that Champions League round of 16 game. And then the following Saturday, it's Man City. We have, on the back of a napkin / random pieces of scrap paper, tried to predict how many points Chelsea are going to get through that run. Let me start by asking, what's your best case scenario looking through that?
I think Chelsea need a statement win out of there. And that means either going to Arsenal and winning, which is incredibly unlikely given the recent record, notwithstanding current situations in league form, etc. Aston Villa away would be another statement win. They've got a fantastic home record. Then I suppose looking at the Man City game into April, Chelsea haven't beaten Man City in any competition since that Champions League final of 2021. So it does look pretty daunting. It's going to be a case of sort of trying to get through this tough patch unscathed.
I think it's really interesting. It's a really interesting comparison between the three teams of Man United, Liverpool and Chelsea, because actually, and this pains me to say it really, on paper, there's very little between the starting 11s.
Yeah.
And then when the squad comes into it, I mean, at the moment, because United are playing once a week, in some ways that makes their squad bigger because they've got more options.
Yeah, definitely.
But looking at a run like this, you know, how much would you want to have a Virgil van Dijk or a Mo Salah or a Bruno Fernandes in your dressing room?
Yeah, I think the main issue that I've sort of had with the younger team per se as well is just the constant rotation. Chelsea just don't seem to be able to find a settled back four. I mean, Rossini has not fielded the same back four in any of his Premier League games, I believe.
He's been unlucky with injuries.
Yeah, injuries, suspensions. I mean, Fofana's not going to start on Sunday, so it's another change coming. And then you're looking at the likes of probably Tosin's likely to start. I doubt he'll throw in Achimpong or Saar, who they brought back from Strasbourg. They're the sort of younger guys. I mean, Arsenal away for your first Premier League game for Saar would be pretty daunting. But I actually wrote a piece for Track Record when Rossini got the job, and we sort of looked at some of Rossini's resolutions, we called them, for how he could be successful in the Chelsea job. And there's so many things he can't control, but one of the things he can control is settling on a starting 11 that he's comfortable with. Still feel like there's too much hopping and changing. She said he's not been helped by injury suspensions and just general sort of rotation, which seems to be a sort of club-wide strategy to go with all the others. But yeah, I think he needs to sort of settle on his 11 that you trust for this run-in. I think that's what the majority of the fans want to see.
Let's look at the Burnley game in a little bit more detail. The red card is the red card. That can happen. But you said to me before that you find it odd that it's an inevitability when Chelsea adds 10 men, they concede.
Yeah.
The one sort of stat that jumped out at me was there were 6 fouls that Chelsea gave away in their own half, the 4th most of any game this year. And 3 of them came in their defending third, which ranks 3rd for them in a single match. At home to Burnley. And some of these came prior to the red card. So that just strikes me as... It just strikes me as really odd. And like, obviously, we've spoken about Chelsea playing better in bigger games and whether that's related to the youth of the players, it might be. But you go back to saying things like, well, if they're not good enough, they're not good enough. Like, it's more the abnormalities. I think Ted Knutson of the Transfer Flow, friend of the podcast, described it as stepping on rakes all over the pitch. So I guess my question is, if you can't get through Burnley at home without making a load of mistakes, how do you get through games where you're more likely to be punished by better teams?
I mean, that's a very good question. That's probably one that Liam Rossini has got to answer, not me. But I think the Burnley game was frustrating again because this has been a bit of a pattern this season. These younger players, I don't want to call them younger, I want to call them inexperienced, I think is probably a better way to describe them. Because like I said, younger just sort of seems to give them a pass. But some of these more inexperienced players don't seem to be able to almost get themselves up for Burnley at home, or the last half an hour of Leeds at home when you're 2-0 up cruising kind of thing. That's when you need to really lock in and switch on, and they just don't seem to be able to do that. We have seen, I mean, if you are looking to hold on to something, we have seen these guys really step up in some of the big games. You mentioned the Caicedo red card against Arsenal. They were the better team with 10 men that day.
You won the game 1-1.
I certainly wasn't saying that. So that kind of proves that they can do it. It's just like all the other red cards have been so costly this season. You know, you look at, I was at the Brighton game, absolutely cruising, 1-0 up after 50 minutes, and then the red card comes, and at no point do you think they're going to see it out. And that is a huge thing. You know, if the club are going to reach the heights that the level of investment warrants, then they're going to have to figure that out. It's a mentality issue, I think.
One player whose mentality has been questioned, and I think in some sense it's unfairly so because he has been suffering with an injury, is Cole Palmer, who was absolutely fantastic and a joy to watch last season and has struggled on his return to really hit the heights. I saw an interesting statistical comparison. I'm just going to pull it up. So last season, his average XG was 0.29 in a game, putting him in the 91st percentile. And this season, 0.24 in the 82nd percentile. Shots per game, 3.09 last season, 94th percentile. Shots per game this season, 1.88. How do Chelsea get through these games if their best player is playing what looks like a very different type of game? He's not taking shots. I don't know if that's confidence or where he's being deployed under Rosinha, but that would seem to me like he needs to play well if you're going to get through this run.
Yeah, I mean, that's the short answer. Yeah. It is a problem. I mean, been very sort of hesitant to criticise Cole Palmer, given that he has clearly been struggling with this groin injury. We don't know exactly what it is. The club are keeping fairly sort of quiet on it. It's a World Cup year. We know he wants to go to the World Cup as well.
Will he, though, if his performance is where they are?
We could do another podcast on that, can't we? We'll save that one for another day. But I actually thought the Leeds game was absolutely brilliant. He was superb. Wow. And he looked like Cole Palmer again. The chance he misses over the bar is just incredible. It's 1 in 1,000. What was the XG on it? I'm sure you'll tell me. It was 0.91 XG or something.
That chance had an XG value of 0.87.
Okay. It's a clanger. We can't dress it up. But going from the Leeds game and then on to the Burnley game, he sort of goes back to that Cole Palmer we were seeing, you know, just after Christmas, where he clearly didn't look himself. And I think that's almost symbolic of Chelsea's season. Palmer hasn't been able to string a run of games together. Chelsea just don't seem to be able to do that for whatever reason.
So I'm sensing a lot of doom and gloom. You seem quite down. But let's just finish this section by asking you, what are your honest expectations from this run?
It's very difficult to see Chelsea coming away from the Emirates with anything, to be honest. Aston Villa are in a slightly more difficult moment as well right now, but the pressure is huge, right? Because in theory, if Chelsea lose at the Emirates on Sunday, I think Villa have got Wolves away on Friday night. The gap could be 8 points between the two sides by the time Chelsea go to Villa Park, and that's a must-win game for Chelsea, especially when you think Liverpool, West Ham at home, aren't they? And I think United have got Palace at home. So I think we might have to see Chelsea take a few more risks as well, is the other thing. I know Connor was talking about the Carabao Cup second leg earlier. Personally, just looking at the prices, I think, what a Chelsea 3.2, 11-5 to finish in the top four. You know, Chelsea have definitely got the sort of mountain to climb.
It's make or break, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And then I suppose it's like, we talked a lot about Rosinha, you know, already in the show. What kind of happens to him if Chelsea do limp to a sixth or seventh place finish? I don't know. That certainly would then cast a bit of doubt over him as well.
Okay, negative vibes from Henry.
I'm trying to be positive. I just prefer to be realistic, Lola, you know?
Let's hear from Connor now. Connor, what are your expectations going through this run, and where do you see things for Chelsea between now and the end of the season?
The run coming up is very daunting indeed. The next run of 11 Premier League games that we've got probably needs 7 odd to be wins to be reaching that sort of top 5, top 4 spot, because that would get us to 66 points. The test for Rosinha is against these better sides. We've been playing very aggressive in the recent games against these teams that play in a bit more of a back five or a bit more of a low block. We've been playing with that sort of 2-2-6, looking to force them back and have more options in the attacking third. But with teams like Arsenal, with Aston Villa, we're going to play Liverpool, we're going to play Man United, we're going to play Man City. Teams that have a lot more threat going the other way in transition, I don't think we'll be as bold as to go 2-2-6. It will probably be more of a 3-2-5, add an extra body to protect against those transitions. And that's where it's going to be interesting to see how Rosinha sets us up, not only on the ball, but off the ball, to protect against that. Because this is something Maresca did quite well in the big games. Of course, his catalogue of big game wins with the likes of Barcelona, Liverpool twice, PSG win the Club World Cup. There's wins that you can look back to, even the 1-1 draw against Arsenal the first time. very well set up from Maresca, probably deserved more than what it got. It was the red card that let us down. But those Maresca approaches to those bigger games gave us a very good sort of standpoint to go and get a result. But with that daunting run, like I just said, at Arsenal, Aston Villa, Newcastle, Everton, Man City, Man United, Brighton, Forest, Liverpool, Tottenham, Sunderland, seven of those games need to be wins, really, for Chelsea to get to the point we want to be, which is at this point just to secure that top five spot and have Champions League again next season. So honestly, my expectations, I think we just about scraped fifth, but like I say, it's all going to come down to how Rosinha can battle with these top sides and get those tactics right, as Maresca did on quite a few occasions.
Okay, we're going to go to a break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about the big game on Sunday at the Emirates, Arsenal versus Chelsea. Henry, I speak as somebody who lives irritatingly close to the Emirates Stadium, and I always seem to find a way of mentioning this on podcasts, but I think it just shows how deeply ingrained it is in my psyche. I would actually quite like Chelsea to pull off a draw.
Really?
At the Emirates. It's just the sounds. I know I'm not even, like, I don't even know if I should bother watching the game, because I'll hear when a goal happens before it's happened. So yeah, how are you feeling?
Look, I mean, as a Chelsea fan, I go into every game thinking that we can win because that's what the club demands. But this is going to be tough. I mean, this is going to be a really tough game. Mentioned a few things already about the rotation. Realistically, Chelsea's back four on Sunday is going to be, wouldn't even say second choice. There's going to be some third, potentially even fourth choice centre-halves in there. Cucurella is a huge miss. So potentially, I think I speak for all Chelsea fans, really, when I say we don't want to see Mal Augusto at left-back again.
No look passes.
It's just absolute madness, yeah. So I think maybe Hato will come in at left-back. He struggled there, and he's going to be up against Saka, and I think that's a huge thing. We saw Saka give Spence a really tough game last weekend.
Maybe Madueke, and they put Saka in the centre, I don't know.
I think Eze will probably start, though, only after his goals against Spurs. But yeah, I mean, Cucurella's always done well, I think, anyway. Against Saka, think of the Euros final, for example, and other sort of Premier League clashes they've had. So I think that is going to be a huge miss to Chelsea. And then he's likely to obviously go with Andre Santos and sort of pivot for Chelsea. Enzo playing a little higher up, and Caicedo is a kind of box-to-box midfielder. So likely to see Palmer then, probably just coming in off the right. And then Chelsea have a huge problem at left winger, don't they? Given that it's pretty obvious Rosina doesn't really trust Garnacho.
For obvious reasons.
I'll let the listeners work out why. Gittins obviously out for the rest of the season with a hamstring problem. Estevao suffering from a hamstring problem as well. So
they did say, by the way, in the transfer flow newsletter, if you want to feel a bit more positive, that Estevao is going to be one of the best players in the world very soon.
That's great. Just very quickly on him. That's great. But he's 18 and he's being managed like an 18-year-old should be, if that makes sense. I think Chelsea are trying to guard against that situation, though, where they don't overuse Estevao.
Well, I mean, I'm sitting here with exactly the same problems with Rio Engamura. And
slightly different. But yeah, I think Estevao has shown a slightly higher level of form than
That's just because he's played more.
You could say that. But anyway, I'm just,
sorry, I distracted you. The other thing is, speaking of problems, which, you know, there are a lot of problems going into this game against Arsenal, as you say, selection issues. Chelsea have conceded a league high 13.54 expected goals from set pieces this season, obviously conceding the equaliser Ziyech Fleming from a set piece.
The assignment was missed.
And the marking assignment. How concerning is that?
Very.
When you went to the Emirates.
Yeah, very concerning. I think we lost 1-0 there last season in a very, very drab game. Goal from a corner, Mikel Merino, it was 1-0. And then if you go to the League Cup first leg at Stamford Bridge, conceded early from a corner, it is a concern, especially when you're missing the height of Wesley Fofana in there as well. It's going to be tough, and there's no better team than Arsenal from dead ball situations.
I thought you were going to say there's no better team than Arsenal, and I was rolling my eyes, but it is true. They are very good from set pieces.
Yeah. I think if Chelsea are to get anything from the game, they're going to need Rob Sanchez to play very, very well. He's capable of having these amazing games. He's done well, actually, generally all season, bar the odd mistake. But yeah, I think they're going to need him to come up big and really sort of command the box from those set-piece situations.
There was a lot of talk off the back of your last visit to the Emirates in the second leg of that Carabao Cup game. It was a very feisty game, from what I could see.
So it should be. It's a London derby.
But there was criticism from Chelsea fans about not really taking the game to Arsenal. Were you happy with that setup? Can you see them kind of going for something similar again?
No, I don't think it will be quite as pragmatic because, like I say, I don't think Chelsea can afford to. I mean, even if we come out, you know, Sunday with a point, I still think there's going to be a gap. You know, the gap's going to get bigger between us and Man United, Aston Villa, and Liverpool this weekend. So I think they will be a little bit more aggressive, but I'm not expecting, you know, gung ho, because if it does become an end to end game, I think there's only one winner and it will not be Chelsea. For all that Arsenal are pragmatic and solid and difficult to break down, they've obviously still got some players that can do a lot of damage at the top end of the pitch. Victor Jokeres looks like he's, you know, coming to a bit of form after the Spurs game. Saka, I thought, was really good as well the weekend, and Eze, obviously.
One way of looking at the Jokeres thing, by the way, is going back a long time, actually, on a former version of this podcast, Ted Knutson said about Victor Jokeres, he will farm goals against lower...
Yeah, it's exactly... Yeah.
...teams in the Premier League, and that's exactly what Tottenham are.
Yeah.
And that's not what Chelsea are.
I think 9 of his 10 Premier League goals have come against either newly promoted sides or Spurs. And then I think the other one's against Everton, maybe.
Which is actually not even necessarily a criticism of Arsenal's strategy, because they needed to take the points in those games, and that's what they've done.
Yeah, like I say, he's going to occupy Chalobah and whoever the other centre half is, and, you know, bring the other guys into play potentially as well. It's going to be a difficult afternoon.
Right, let's go to tactics man Connor. Connor, how do you think Rossini is going to set up against Arsenal, and what would you like to see that was maybe different from that Carabao Cup performance?
In terms of how we'll set up against Arsenal, I think we will see a bit of a mixture between the two games that we saw in the Carabao Cup games, actually. The first game was a lot more man-to-man. It was very aggressive. Again, that started from a 0-0 standpoint in terms of aggregate. We were very aggressive and we tried to go all out. We had Fofana following Ødegaard all over the pitch, which was sometimes in his own half. Sometimes Fofana would be the furthest Chelsea player forward because of how aggressive we were. In that second game, it was a lot more zonal, a bit more of a passive approach. We were basically waiting for the first 60 minutes. We were down by a goal, of course, and then looking to get Estevao and Palmer on into the game to try and make a difference and essentially turn the tide on its head. That didn't work out in the end, but it could have done. And that was the risk that they took. I think in this game, we see something similar to a bit of both. We have maybe a bit of a hybrid press where we're a bit more passive to begin with because we are away at the Emirates and we've got such a hard run of fixtures coming that any points are big points to gather. So I don't think we'll be looking to go out all aggressive and get blown away from the get-go. I think we'll see a midfield three, Caicedo, Santos and Enzo, whether that's Enzo on the left or in the 10. I think that either way, it will give us that little bit more solidity to match up with Arsenal's midfield three and then gives you the chance to go man-to-man from that more zonal block. In this game, we should have Palmer and Pedro Neto, which maybe gives us a little bit more than we had in that second game, especially to hit Arsenal when we do come from that sort of zonal approach and hit them a little bit more in transition with someone like Pedro Neto who can attack that free space and then Palmer who can sort of guide those transitions. So gives us a little bit more threat from within that block. And I think that that's why we're going to see a bit of a mixture between the two games in this one at the weekend.
Right, Henry, before we go today, we are going to have to talk about the race for Champions League. We've obviously got top four odds here, so I'll just rattle through. I think Arsenal and City, we almost don't need to consider because they're nailed on, really. But United, 15-8 on. Aston Villa, 7-4 on. Liverpool, 5-4 on. And Chelsea, 11-5. So there's already a bit of a gap opening up there in the prices. Worth also pointing out, Chelsea 5-1, joint fourth favourite, I think, for the FA Cup with Liverpool, and 18-1 for the Champions League. So before we get specific on the Champions League, what's a successful end to the season, Chelsea? What passes for success?
It's a good question.
I'm full of good questions.
Yeah, you're really putting me on the spot here. Well, look, the club talk about qualifying for the Champions League as the be-all and end-all. So I really personally don't think it's a big ask to expect the team to finish fourth last year. We want to see a bit of improvement. We've accepted that's not going to happen. So I still think Champions League qualification is necessary for all of the benefits that that brings, not just financially, you know, the quality of players that you can attract, et cetera, et cetera. And also, I mean, maybe I'm getting greedy, but Chelsea need to win a domestic cup. They haven't won a domestic cup since 2018, which is staggering. I mean, you actually probably will know all about that, Lola, because your team have done Chelsea in a couple of finals, I think. One on this day 2 years ago.
Oh, that was a lovely day.
Yeah.
And I did send you a lovely picture afterwards.
Yeah, that didn't go down very well. Yeah, I mean, An FA Cup and fifth, I think, would completely switch the narrative and would turn things around and say, actually, that was a really successful season for Chelsea.
If you didn't manage to make it into the Champions League places, would a Champions League semi-final, for argument's sake, and an FA Cup final that you lost both of be enough?
Personally, I don't think so, no. Don't want to dwell too much on the sort of ownership and the model. I know this has been touched on in previous podcasts that, you know, we've done together and you've been on. But if, let's just say hypothetically, Chelsea don't finish in, you know, in the Champions League places this year, that would be one out of four.
Yeah.
You know, for this new ownership. And given that, like I say, everything you hear from the club is top four, Champions League qualifications, absolutely paramount. There would have to be some serious questions when they're asked of the guys that are recruiting the players. I think it'd be too harsh on, you know, Rossini is not going to be the difference, I don't think, between whether Chelsea get in the top four or not, or top five places. But like I say, if it were to be one from four, that would really shine a light on some of the recruitment, like I say, at the club. And you would think those guys would have a bit to answer for.
I think if you'll permit me to have the last word on this, I think the perception of Chelsea has changed so much in the last 5 years or so since Abramovich left, in the sense that...
Very nice way of putting it.
You know, when we were growing up, it was a dead cert that Chelsea were going to be in and around the top of the Premier League,
yeah,
and winning silverware. And it was like the old adage with Chelsea was that the manager didn't matter.
Yeah.
They would win anyway. And even if the manager won, he might still be sacked.
Yeah.
That's what happened to Rafa Benitez.
Yeah.
And I think that view of Chelsea has changed with Abramovich leaving the club, because obviously Blücher have wanted to take things in a different direction. This all goes back to this thing I was reading about Chelsea's front of shirt sponsor and where they view themselves relative to what the market views them. So whether they think they're worth a 60 million a year sponsorship or more than that, which is what they lose. That's why they end up with these short-term deals. But I think that's what we're seeing at Chelsea, and that's the internal battle, is this identity crisis. Is our Chelsea, the club that we grew up with, the winning club, you know, win by hook or by crook, no matter which managers get caught in the crossfire, players, whatever. Or are they now this kind of modern day, like
commercial machine,
franchise almost? Yeah. And I think it's an obvious truth here, but the more years you finish outside the Champions League, the more you become the latter.
I think, sorry, Lola, I know you said that was going to be the last word. But
no, you're the guest. You're the guest in my house. You have the last word.
Thanks. I think on a more macro level, it's harder. You know, we're talking about finishing dead certs in Champions League places. It's harder now for that to happen. You know, we've seen Liverpool even miss out recently, relatively recently. You know, United have had a while out of the top four, a couple of seasons, haven't they? So it is more difficult. There's more teams now that can finish in the top four places. But I do just think the one thing that I kind of struggle with the most with this model and this ownership with Chelsea is that last year Chelsea finished fourth and won the Club World Cup, won the Conference League. But obviously winning the Club World Cup, whatever anyone wants to say, was, you know, was a huge deal at the time. And
champions of the whole world. No one can take that away.
Exactly. We're going to be wearing the badge in the Conference League next year. But I think you then realise, you look at the transfer window, they brought in João Pedro, who's done really well, to be fair, I think, this season. But then it's relegated Ipswich striker. They brought in Dario Issugo, a midfielder that's been injured, hasn't played. And they brought in Man United's worst winger, who they, you know, couldn't wait to get rid of. And it seemed like we were the only ones that wanted him. It's like, it talks about the importance of qualifying for the Champions League. The whole idea is you're also able to attract better players. And if Chelsea aren't going to sort of change this approach of the player trading model, and rather than prioritising the issues on the pitch, then I'm honestly quite apathetic about whether Chelsea are in those Champions League places. And it might be the wake-up call that the club needs.
That's been your Odds Law. I've been your host, Lola Katz-Roberts, and thank you very much to Connor Holden and, of course, to Henry Beasley for joining me today. They say you should never go back, but this sort of feels like when Mourinho came back to Chelsea.
I think you probably quite enjoyed hearing me down in the dumps about my football club, Lola, as well, to be fair.
I'm just glad you came today. Otherwise, I would have been Billy No Mates. I'd have had to do the podcast by myself. So, look, hope you enjoyed it, and we will see you next week.
Hi, Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's mind.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.